Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Well, it's one of the time of years that we really love a lot. Yes, hunting season. But the sports season as well, you know, especially the high school sports season when school kicks up again and there's, you know, all kinds. Football's a big thing too, but you've got golf and you've got cross country and then people are really preparing. There's volleyball, basketball, all that's coming along here. How do our kids handle some of the pressure that's on them, on the field, off the field? Not only in the high school level, but the college level. Are we preparing them well for that? We're going to talk about that today. Capri Richardson is back on the program. Volleyball student from the University of Montana. That was a few years ago. But now she is a sports counselor and deals with these things with students, the pressures that they have. We'll talk about that and get some real good, solid advice out there as you guys prepare for the sports season here on Voices of Montana. I've done a little bit of sports myself. I would think everyone has hopefully tried some sports, but at a competitive level, you know, the game changes a little bit. And then the higher the competitive level, the more pressure that these kids face. And are we, I mean, we forget their kids sometimes, especially I think in college. Are we really addressing those needs? And are they expressing their needs? And what are those needs? Capri Richardson joins us here, a standout University of Montana volleyball player. And then since then has become a mental health advocate as well, and is with First Contact Athletic Counseling. I think you founded that program, didn't you, Capri?
Yes, I did. And
good
it's
job.
So good to be on again.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Good morning to you. Why did you do that? Talk about what First Contact Athletic Counseling is, but why? Why did you do this? And I think, you know, when you did it, there wasn't that many athletic sports counseling outfits out there, was there?
No, and that is a huge reason why I created the company, because being a former athlete, professionally, collegiately, high school, and coach, there was not much support for our community. And when you don't have that representation of knowing this is where you can go, here are some resources, then what do most people in the athletic community do? They just don't get the help, right? And they're like, I'll just tough it out and I'll be okay. And we're coming to find out that is not the case.
I'm going to give a little bit about your background here. University of Montana, you came from Colorado, I believe, one-time Big Sky, second team all-conference in your junior year. A lot of accolades in your senior year as well. But you had to work up the ranks too, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did. Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah, right? And then played professionally in Europe and then coached too. And now as a mental health advocate, you can talk about this athlete's journey. What are we missing now, or what were we missing then? Maybe there's a couple of questions here. What were we missing then that we have now? And then what are we still missing now?
Yes. So back when I was going to school, in the 2011-2015 era, there was only on-campus support for athletes, which if you think about the system itself, on-campus counseling, they only have so much space, so many staff for the campus, right? You're talking about thousands of students and or staff. So even for an athlete, if they even felt like, okay, I need to get help, you know, there's a wait list, or they're just like, oh, this is just a real quick deal, and then I don't see them again because the numbers just aren't there. And then when you think about it, there's no one in athletics that you're like, okay, they understand what I go through day in and day out. They see that I'm getting up at 5 a.m., certain seasons or days, and then going hard in the classroom and in the gym until like 6 or 7 p.m. And then I have to get up and do that over and over again, and then game days, right? So that was for sure missing. We kind of tried to help each other out, but, you know, it's like the blind leading the blind. So now it's starting to become almost an NCAA mandate for certain levels of college programs to have mental health within their athletics department. So that is really great to see.
And so it's First Contact Athletic Counseling GoDaddySites.com. Tell me about then this business. I mean, there's a lot of things to chat about here, and we're just going to kind of spitball some things here. When did you start it? How has it grown? How has, as a professional and a mental health advocate, how have you learned to better address some of these needs for athletes?
Yeah, so I actually started the company about a year and a half ago, right out of my graduate program and right out of getting my licensure in the state of Texas to practice therapy. And I was not sure how it was going to go, but I was like, I know these services are needed, and I will do my best to, you know, advocate, market, just so that people know that it's here. And now, a whole year and a half later, I'm like, wow, not only are more people getting assistance, even asking me for help or where they can go if I'm not able to serve them, like if they live in a different state or something, but the questions are being asked, and that fills my heart with so much joy, because people are realizing I can put the armor down. I don't have to act like I have it all together anymore. And we can actually find help and health in community versus in isolation. So that's kind of been the journey with First Contact. And it is still a growing field, athletic mental health. But it's one that's heavily needed. And if you think about all the people involved, right, whether that's sports broadcasters like yourself or athletic trainers, referees, coaches, like there's just so many components to what makes our community great. And all of us need the assistance at one time or another.
There's a couple of things you hit on. And we'll start with this too, the stigma about it. Athletes fear, you know, that they're going to be seen as weak or that's, I guess they carry that. And then hearing that it can be shed must be a moment for them. Meaning hearing that burden can be shed, that worry and that stigma, that they're no longer isolated in that regard. Talk about getting over that in helping athletes.
Yeah, I mean, the stigma is real. And it's kind of been a part of this, like, closed door, keep everything quiet, deal with it off the court or, you know, away from your performance because we don't have time for that. It was essentially the mantra that would go about. So when you hear that day in and day out of like, leave it at the door and, you know, suck it up and toughen up. I mean, in your mind, that narrative plays over and over again, you know, throughout the years that you play, and you're like, okay, so now I've learned that it is actually not safe or okay for me to voice my concerns. And maybe I'm, you know, maybe I'm being a baby even or weak for even thinking that there's something wrong. So then what do? We shut it down. We stuff it down. And just kind of like a beach ball in water, what does that do when we try and stuff that down? It pops right back up in our faces and we're like, oh my goodness. Right. So now that stigma is starting to shed where people are realizing like, I can't keep stuffing it down. And I actually perform worse, right? If we want to even take it that far, you're not going to be performing at your best if you are struggling mentally because there's something else that's in the way.
And the competitive nature of sports, I think there's some value in, I wouldn't want to call it a stigma, but there's some value in understanding that it is, there are times when you can suck it up. There are times that, you know, that's that whole overcoming, you know, which is important in sports and in life for that matter, you know, so do they understand a balance? Can you get to a balance between, what is stigma and what is value, in that?
Yeah. And I talk to my clients about that compartmentalization, right? Versus kind of, you know, that suck it up or get over it type of talk that can just make someone be like, all right, I'm never supposed to touch that versus compartmentalization is saying, we're going to touch on that later. But in the meantime, what we're going to do is grow your capacity for adversity by teaching you skills, processing through whatever feelings you have. That way you're like, I have more space to actually deal with this problem, whether it's right now, if that's what's needed, or to be like, you know, I can save that for after the game and still actually feel fine and perform well. So it's essentially just broadening that space for adversity. And like you said, yeah, it's going to be not just in a game, but in life, where it's like, you can't be, you know, if we simplify it, you can't be so caught up in last weekend's loss. And now guess what? You're bringing it into this weekend. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where you're like, well, you're thinking you're going to lose, so you are going to lose. So we also address that in the counseling room too.
Capri Richardson again with us. First Contact Athletic Counseling is her organization, licensed professional counselor, and specializing in mental health and the well-being of athletes, but a former Division I volleyball player and played professionally in Europe as well. Coaches have adapted to this as well. It goes back to 2014. 2015 was your senior year at the University of Montana. Had a really good year, too, and as your junior year as well. So, you know, congratulations on that. Talk about how coaches have adapted, or what are they learning about this? And the aspect I'm getting at here is, you know, sometimes to get the best out of people, you challenge them. And mm-hmm. that is not a mental attack, unless they're doing it wrong, right?
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, coaches are also starting to get more into mental health trainings as required by the NCAA, and even some high school districts across the country are starting to add that in as like a continuing education credit for coaches and teachers, so that they're better able to recognize signs and symptoms of mental struggles. And like you said, sometimes it is just in the way you say it, or where is the intention? Is it purely just to challenge me, even though you and I have a good relationship, or there's love there, or care at least? Or is it you're just being a toxic coach? Because those are out there too. And, you know, slowly as things change over time, we're starting to learn and realize the old way or the old school way of coaching may not always be the best for everyone.
And yet it's still around in a, I don't know. I see a lot of coaches, right? And very few of them, in my mind, don't belong where they're at. There's value in that too. I'm just having a rough time understanding, you know, and maybe it's just experience, I suppose. And probably playing the game a little bit, as you said, recognizing those struggles. Can we be taught that?
Yes, 1,000%.
Yeah.
A lot of it, you know, especially if you're getting trained by a certified professional, a licensed professional, there are so many trainings that are coming out now for people to learn, oh, well, when someone who's, you know, generally pretty outgoing and excited to be around everyone starts to change slowly over time, you start to realize, oh, so-and-so has not been hanging out with the team as often as they were before. Or when we do team meals, they're eating less, or they're not eating really anything at all. And sometimes, you know, without having that trained eye, it can just be like, oh, well, it's just another day for them. Or sometimes I've even heard, well, good, they need to eat less anyways, which that's a whole other thing. But, you know, if you have a trained eye to be like, oh, something's going on with you, I might need to check in. And then from there, you know, refer to someone who might be able to help. Or sometimes they just need a quick check-in from their coach and they might be okay.
Do coaches need a quick check-in with somebody like you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Coaches are probably one of my favorite, underrated favorite clients, because oftentimes, you know, they think it's the athlete, it's not me, right? And sometimes, you know, yes, the athletes are going through things, but coaches have so many responsibilities and they're pulled in so many different directions, or their livelihood is just dependent on the system of people who are predominantly younger than them. Like, that is stressful enough, right? So while also balancing families if they have one. So, yeah, I really do enjoy working with coaches because if you think about it, they're actually even more influential than parents can be. Because if you think about it, most people have maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 kids on average, and that's for a lifetime. Coaches will go through a team of, depending on your sport, you name it, for football, you know, 50 plus, and that's year by year, depending on what level you're at and all of those things. So much influence that coaches have on our athletes.
And that's why it's so important that they are genuine and that they are in the right place too, because of that influence. Mm-hmm. Grizzly volleyball standout and professional player in Europe, and now a sports counselor, Capri Richardson. She's lived that athlete's journey. And you, Capri, thank you for being here. I appreciate a conversation about these things. Yeah. I don't think we talk about them enough. And you know, your background too, I think plays into this because you're from a military family. I think they were both from the Air Force, right?
Yes, sir.
And so there was discipline because that's part of the training and that's part of the order for you. You know, talk about that. Talk about how discipline, you know, enters into everything that an athlete is trying to accomplish as it relates to, you know, staying mentally healthy through all that too.
Yeah. I mean, discipline is huge, right? It's one thing to have the talent. It's another to go further with discipline is what I've always been taught. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to how we can encourage discipline with mental health help isn't always just doom and gloom and sadness and problems. Right. Mental health is also including mental well-being. Like, how do we make sure that you're okay? And a part of that is discipline. Of like, okay, I'm experiencing this thing in my life or these feelings. How can I stay the course and again, grow that capacity for adversity so that discipline feels easier and it's not, you know, other things aren't clouding my judgment or my want to become undisciplined. So that's a huge part to being a successful athlete, right? Like if you have routines, you have deadlines, you have numbers and goals that you have to hit. So huge part of it.
What do they suffer with most? Or, I mean, do you just, you know, say, I'm not in a good place? Or do you say, you know, it's anxiety? Or do you try to identify depression? Or is it just plain burnout? I mean, how important is it to address very specifically some of these things that athletes may be feeling, and we're probably talking about at a deeper level. If you're identifying anxiety or identifying depression, that's probably at a deeper level. I think in what you just said, you know, you're trying to get to a place of well-being and maintaining, and not get to that place where you have to diagnose something as anxiety.
Exactly, and when people come into me, right, they don't know always what might be going on. Some people do because we do have the internet. But it's still my job to also give them a accurate picture of what they are going through and what severity type, right? Even if you have anxiety, it may not be severe anxiety. And that's okay, too, to still get help so that you're like, I just want to be okay. Can you help me be okay? So, yeah, sometimes I'll have athletes that will, and coaches, people in general, come in and discuss, you know, symptoms of anxiety, depression, eating disorders, burnout, which isn't like true clinical term, but that is I call it a gateway into other things that might be more clinical. Mental blocks, like a lot of people, say I work with a basketball player and they're like, yeah, all of a sudden my threes are just off. Like I'm just going through a mental block or something. That indicates to me that there's something maybe underneath the surface that we need to address so that one, whatever that thing is, can, you know, be in an okay place, but also you can get back to playing the game that you love, especially if you have the talent and the discipline already. Let's get you back.
Well, and I'm thinking, you know, discipline, that's a good foundation for good mental well-being, because you're probably just adding, if you recognize that you're getting off track a little bit, maybe you add a behavioral, you know, activity or something like that. And it takes discipline to do that. Have you ever recommended an athlete be held out from an athletic competition because of their mental health?
So I will work with teams. So a part of my job, yes, I own my own private practice, but I will also contract that out with different entities, or I'll do more team organization-based work. And when I'm in those team environments especially, I will communicate with staff in a very, you know, HIPAA-compliant way about where someone's mental well-being is. And I have had to make only really like one really of like they might need to step away for a time just because they were suicidal. So, I mean, you're not going to get much out of them, and they're not going to get much out of this if they're not able to recover well. But otherwise, most people are at least able to still attend practice because they have this outlet of counseling, and we're learning skills and working through hard things. So that hasn't had to come up too much.
Wins and losses.
But it can happen.
The wins and losses, too. The highs and the lows. You know, as we're talking about, anxiety is one thing. That's probably, you know, a lot of causes there. But, you know, maybe meeting expectations. Depression can come, I think, from not meeting expectations. Or if you put too much pressure on the wins and the losses and forget the other rewards of sports. Do you see that? It's a very, you know, we're in a highly competitive world nowadays. It's hard for us to pull back from that.
Right. Yeah. No, we can also see that when there's an identity that's wrapped up purely in sports, right? That's just going to make the pressure of sports feel like it's 10 times more than maybe what it is, because you're like, this is what I live and breathe off of. And I don't know who else I am or what else I like or my escapes from, you know, the pressures of it. And this is all I have to turn to. And that can just feel very suffocating and closed in.
Do you have methods to help athletes deal with wins and losses in balance?
Yeah, it's really, when you think about the average season for an athlete, whatever sport it is, things just feel very go, 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 do or die. And we sometimes, as just human beings, forget that this season will pass. For better or for worse, it will pass. And being able to see the bigger picture and reframing that this is only a speck of your life, this season or this sport in general, because sports doesn't last forever. I know a lot of us wish that it could, but playing it anyway, it certainly doesn't. So it's a lot of times us working on that reframing aspect of there is more that we're working towards, and sports is right now your vehicle of how you're getting to your final destination of whatever that is, or your higher purpose in life.
Preet Richardson is our guest, a licensed professional counselor and a former Division I athlete, University of Montana volleyball, played professionally later in Europe. I think did a little coaching as well. After that experience, Capri, you founded a First Contact Athletic Counseling after getting your master's in clinical health and mental health. And I really like that. I really like that you've got that experience, and then there's you become a mental health advocate out of that experience. Because I think, as we have said, you know, athletes probably short shift themselves when it comes to mental health. Coaches may do the same thing. Parents may do the same thing. But we're recognizing, thankfully now, that's not the right approach. So thank you for being here. I really appreciate that. I do want to talk a little bit about suicide awareness. I'm going to save some time for that too. And name, image, and likeness. That's where student athletes can now get endorsements and actually get paid and still remain a student athlete. I think that might put some more pressure on. I want to go to parents and their role, setting expectations, and then creating healthy, supportive environments, but, you know, not kowtowing to the athlete, you know, still expecting everything that you would expect from a child or in that role, so to speak. Give us some advice for parenting through an athlete's journey.
Yeah. Parents, you know, families are the foundation of that athlete's way of viewing the world and how they're able to overcome the hard things that come with life. So it's when I work with families, one, I never tell them how to parent, because you alone know how to do that. And I'm, you know, not an expert in your family. But what I will recommend is, how can we be a safe space for our child, not just physically or financially, but psychologically as well? Because when we're able to equip them with the sense of, like, no matter what happens, I am still here to support you and care for you, that's when you start to get your children, I mean, your athletes, to actually open up, right? We hear parents say, they don't ever talk to me. They just say that they're fine or they want to be left alone. And it's like, okay, in that moment, yes, there's, you know, a bid for connection from parent to athlete. But what about all the other moments where they're just looking down and you may not ask, I see something's going on. Is there anything that I could help with? Or, just, you know, just showing that there's some support there. That's one of the biggest things that I try to work with families on. And I would say, secondly, it would be, you know, not putting the sport above them, right? If there is a teammate or a coach or someone who is knowingly mistreating your athlete, how do you go about handling that with the athlete, validating them of, okay, yeah, there's some behavior there that's not great. What is a good action plan or game plan? Because I'm on your side again, no matter what is happening. But of course, if the athlete is, you know, causing some issues too, well, then we got to relook at that and be honest and real. But just showing that you are there for them no matter what, because the rest of the world is not.
What are some of those practical tips? Now, I go to, you know, being reminded, don't read your press clips, right? Don't read what the media is saying. But now you've got social media. So, you know, don't mm-hmm. Stay away from social media. Or and there are probably other practical tips that maybe we can employ, or I think I would certainly encourage people to do some research on it. But what are some of these practical tips that can be employable?
Yeah, I would say that car ride home is a huge one. When you're in a car ride after a game or practice, good or bad, ask them how they feel like things are going, or did you have fun? Did you enjoy? Instead of going right into, yeah, you could have made that pass, but you missed it. And, you know, trying to kind of backseat coach, if you will. Also in that car ride of, if you can tell that they're not in a good mood, okay, let's not even talk about it. Let's go get your favorite ice cream, or let's go take a little drive somewhere. It doesn't have to be a grandiose gesture, but again, letting them see, like, that game is not a representation of who they are. I would say another tip would be, don't wait until you're at the dinner table to ask how they're doing. And I say that because that is such a blip of time for everyone to come together. Ask. You can even text them throughout the day or during the day. Or ask them in moments that are a little more unexpected. Kids, when they get to that dinner table, automatically guards are up, especially if things aren't going right in life. They're like, oh, great. Now I'm stuck here at this table, and I know they're going to ask me about my day and everything else. It kind of just puts them into defense mode. Mm-hmm. So don't just ask them at the dinner table about who they are, what they are, what's going on.
That's good. That those are things that we can do. Let's switch over. Well, there's a lot to think, to say about name, image, and likeness. I'm not sure I'm mm-hmm. done with the family aspect of it as well. Are there more practical things that a family can do together? Do they want to engage in that sport with this athlete? You know, give us a little more, if there's more out there to share. I know there is.
Yeah. Oh, there's a bunch more. Yeah. I'll give you two more.
Thank you.
One is, whenever it is time to hang out, don't always put it in a competitive situation or a competitive way. Like, just taking them shopping, or just saying, let's go to the park and just chat and talk, or let's have a picnic. Like, things that aren't sports related. Again, going back to that identity, you're showing them that I don't see you purely as an athlete, so we don't always have to do athletic or competitive things, if that makes sense. A second one I would say is, yeah, I think parents at least once should try the sport with their kid.
Yeah.
because we have a lot of sideline coaching sometimes from parents. We get, you know, the game can get really hot and heavy and we want to add our input. But oftentimes that comes from a place of not understanding what it's even like to be in that environment or in that situation to begin with. And a lot of parents, once they actually play the sport, they're like, oh my goodness, you have so many things to think about and worry about. I can't even imagine, or I don't even know how you do this. And there's that additional appreciation for what they do.
Thank you for that. And those are things that we can take and employ and do some more research on it too. Capri Richardson, first contact athletic counseling.godaddysites.com, a sports counselor. Of course, an athlete. When I talk to, athletes, they don't like it when I say former athlete.
Once an athlete, always an athlete.
Right. Yeah. Name, image, and likeness. Again, this is, I think, a 2017 NCAA ruling that really, I think it was a good ruling. And I think we're going to have to walk it out still. But essentially what it did was allow the student athlete, and we're talking mostly it is at that college level, but even in high school too, some states have employed some NIL, cautiously here in Montana, by the way. But that's where a student can actually get compensated for endorsements and things like that. I look at Arch Manning and the game he played, and it's just an example. Texas lost to Ohio State, really, really high pressure game. Arch, he only had a couple of starts. He's already out there doing name, image, and likeness endorsements. And I'm not sure he played a real good game at all. I feel like maybe they're getting ahead a little bit. How do you coach kids through this?
Yeah, it is a, like you said, it is a new frontier that all of us are trying to navigate, because there are still rules and laws that are being created or being discussed as we speak about how to regulate it. So it really just feels like a whirlwind of a policy. And when it comes to the athlete themselves, they are already pressured to be like, okay, well, now I have all this money, or I'm getting asked to do these sponsorships and things. That's adding more time to their day, right? Even if it's, okay, I have to make a social media post now saying that I'm affiliated with this sponsor or affiliate or what have you. That's adding more time, more pressure, more eyes on the athlete. And then when it comes to money, if we think about it, these are still young brains trying to navigate the adult world. And when you add in adult type money, right, when we're talking about thousands, even millions of dollars, that's not necessarily something that a lot of kids have much education on. So that financial literacy even can be a lot. I've even talked with some that, because of that NIL, that can end up putting their parents into different tax brackets that people don't really think about. So there's just a lot that we're all still learning to navigate this. And of course, that can affect us mentally as well.
Capri Richardson is with us here, and a sports counselor, former University of Montana standout volleyball player, played as well in Europe, did some coaching, and now mental health advocate as we talk about the mental health side of sports. This will go rather fast. Suicide awareness, Capri. I was surprised to learn in chatting with you that suicide is an issue in our athletic world.
Yes, very much so, unfortunately.
Tell me why, and tell me what we need to do about it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, suicide across the country is it's the 11th leading cause of death of everyone, not just athletes. And then when it comes to NCAA athletes, it is the second leading cause of death for those athletes. So it is a huge problem. And then when you talk about Montana's either one or two leading cause of death there. So it's a lot. And we definitely have to be more attentive to, like what we've been talking about, mental health, because it is a preventable death.
It's probably, yeah, it is. It's very much so. But there's probably a lot of factors that play into that, not just athletics. Do you have to separate the athletic part of that to try and deal with it?
1,000%. Yeah. When we talk about suicide, we are at our most human-based level of trying to survive something that feels unimaginable, pain-wise. So athletics-wise, that's not even in the conversation, at least, you know, in most cases, because we often see sports or just moving our bodies is a good general way of an outlet. But sometimes when we're in that crisis mode, yeah, we're kicking that to the curb for a moment.
So just reach out, right? There's a lot of places to reach out. And I think more and more people are recognizing those things. As you noted earlier, you know, a mental health well-being, a wellness check, but also a regimen of mental health mm-hmm. behaviors is important. And it's for all of us. So I'm glad we're understanding that. But as suicide's still a gut punch, and we need to keep focused
on it. Yeah, it's a huge focus. And I'll add this plug in here, too. Yeah. With the Montana Football Hall of Fame ceremony, there's a Speak Up symposium that we've been working with Rick Holmes and Jim O'Day and other great folks like Scott Richter to bring awareness to mental health and suicide within the football community, but athletics in general. So that's been a really good resource, as well as the 988 hotline number if you're in crisis.
Thank you for mentioning that, because that's where we first caught up with you when we did a program a while ago about that. So I got about looks like now a minute. Give us some about the rewards, because there's just something about competition, winning and losing, that drives us on.
Yes. Yeah. The rewards of mental health is you get to feel like you are limitless, like you are boundless. Nothing is holding you back, or very little is holding you back, and you don't feel as weighed down by it. And to just feel like you can be enjoying the sunlight again is what I like to say to my clients. You feel like you can just have that big exhale when it comes to living your life.
Yeah. Capri, this has been real informative. I appreciate you for coming on, but I really appreciate your heart for this and making a difference in people's lives. And I look forward to chatting with you. Your business, hopefully it's not busy, but I'm glad it is. And I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.